You're listening to the BBC World Service. This is Europe Today. Today, our guest editor is a man who must surely know the meaning of the word pressure. Until earlier this year, Geir Harder was the Prime Minister of Iceland as his country teetered on a chasm of financial ruin. It wasn't just the 300,000 people of Iceland who were caught up in this. Britain invoked anti-terrorism laws to freeze Icelandic assets in an effort to guarantee the savings of British people and institutions in Icelandic bank accounts. This is how Europe Today reported events in Reykjavik in January.
Street protests have become more violent. Late yesterday evening, demonstrators pelted the car of the Prime Minister with eggs and drinks cans as he tried to make his way into Parliament. And in the early hours of this morning, police in Reykjavik used tear gas for the first time in 60 years after around 2,000 people hurled fireworks, shoes, toilet paper, bizarrely, rocks and paving stones at the Parliament building. Protesters told us that people were furious with the government.
Of course, there's extreme disappointment towards the government, so people don't trust the government, and actually, until now, nobody has claimed responsibility or even apologized for the national bankruptcy.
They put us into a very bad position, the money people and the politicians, the government.
The government hasn't done anything to acknowledge their responsibility on the situation as it is in Iceland today. Nobody has resigned, nobody has actually taken responsibility or even said, excuse me, we did something wrong.
Well, while all this was swirling around him, Geir Harder was diagnosed with malignant esophageal cancer and he decided to leave politics. Geir Harder joins me in the studio now. Geir, we'll hear the first of your pieces that you specially commissioned for Europe Today in a moment, but to begin with the chaos of earlier this year, the question I guess you're asked repeatedly, and I will ask you again now, is did you really have no idea that this was about to hit?
No, we had no idea when the storm hit us that this was going to happen and the magnitude of the hurricane. And of course, this was just not an isolated Icelandic problem. We'll come to that later in this program. But I suppose, with the benefit of hindsight, which is of course a wonderful analytical tool when you have it, we can say very simply and in the simplified version, the short version, that our banks, of course, had become far too big for the rest of the economy in comparison to the size of the economy.
They'd amassed enormous debts, hadn't they? I mean, relative to Iceland's GDP.
And the supervision and the control was not strong enough. And when the storm hit, the resources of the government and the central bank were nowhere near sufficient enough to cope with it. I suppose that something could have done about this a few years back. The expansion of the banks could have been restricted in some way, but once this happened this year, there was very little that could be done. And of course, it was a combination of internal and external factors that actually triggered it.
Sure. I mean, I don't think anybody is disputing the fact that Iceland was caught up in a global financial gale. But, I mean, the IMF said that this was the biggest banking failure in history relative to the size of an economy. Mm-hmm. It's a heavy legacy to hold, isn't it?
Well, you're absolutely right. It is a big blow. It was a big blow to the economy. The economic consequences were very severe. And, of course, the political consequences have been dramatic in many ways. But one of the things that my government did and the Althing decided to do was to set up an investigation commission to actually try to answer all the questions that have arisen. And they will come out with their report in November, which hopefully will be the conclusive study of this. Of course, there are books coming out by individuals, but those are interesting. But I think we'll have to wait until November to get the final answers.
And just briefly, I know that you've made an extraordinary recovery from the cancer that you were diagnosed with, and it was the reason that you gave for leaving politics. But can you give us some sort of idea of the huge pressure you must have been under?
Well, those were obviously the most difficult weeks and months of my professional life. There's no doubt about that.
Personal life.
But, you know, I had no intention of giving up. I I thought it felt it was my objective and my mission to actually not run away from the problem, but get the country moving again and solving the problems at hand. Now, the political situation took a different turn. There is a new government. I wish them the best of luck in solving the problems. We had elections. My party is in opposition, and I'm no longer in parliament, so I'm just a private citizen here talking to you now.
Well, you're also a part-time editor of Europe Today, and that's for that, right. You're very welcome. Tell me about the first piece that you've commissioned.
Well, that relates in a way to what we were just discussing. The global economic crisis is indeed a global crisis, and it has affected a number of other small countries in a very severe way. And I feel that in some ways the situation in some of the smaller countries in Europe has been underreported in the world media. So I decided to use this opportunity here to take a look at two small EU countries, Ireland and Latvia. First Ireland, and here is the report by Jennifer Duggan of the Irish broadcaster RTE in Dublin.
The unemployment rate here in Ireland has reached 12.2%, the highest rate in 15 years. Every month, increasing numbers of people are being made redundant and are facing financial insecurity. While money is being pumped into the banks, many homeowners are struggling with negative equity and repossession. I'm outside a social welfare office in the centre of Dublin city. For many here, it's their first time to sign on, something most never thought they would have to do.
It's disastrous. It really is. It's getting worse by the month. I've looked around to try and get some work, but there's nothing at the moment. You know, I'm in the construction. I was a sales rep in construction. So the banks and the builders have been looked after, and he's just taxing everybody else, the ordinary workers, and it's totally unfair.
Just been let go 6 weeks ago from my job. I worked in media. It was complete shock, total and utter shock. I've studied in the area for like 6 years and I just got let go. I was saving for a house before, so it means that I'm digging into my down payment savings that I had, that I'd accumulated for the last few years. So I'm really disappointed about that, and I have to get my parents to help me, which is really bad when you're pushing nearly 30 and you have to get your parents to help you again.
I was in property auctioneering. Estate agents, and that sector, there's a number of sectors that have been hit very badly, and auctioneering would be one of them, property of course being the other. The banks have been hit of course as well, but then again we all know they caused it. An aspect of this whole thing is quite good, because it makes people question the way they've lived and what they're living for, their motivations, their actions, their value system. For me personally, I would see it as a challenge to try and stay positive.
During the boom years, the future looked bright for those in their 20s. With only vague memories of the last recession, money was there to be spent. However, now unemployment has increased the most among this age group. I'm visiting a young couple, Keith and Tanya, at their home in County Meath, an area with one of the highest rates of unemployment in the country. They have two children and have both lost their jobs in the past year.
It's been 11 months now since I lost my job, and there's just absolutely nothing out there. I'm in the construction, qualified carpenter for the last 9 years, but there's just nothing locally.
I was let go in February. I worked for a distribution company. They distributed products for salons and beauty therapists and that, and just with the decline in the salons, nobody's using them anymore, so hence why I was let go. Like Keith said as well, when you're looking in the papers and the local news agents and you know, you're trying to get yourself out there, but there's 101 people behind you trying to get the same job. Like for me, I never went to college, or I never done a course. I left school like after my leaving cert and started working, like so many people around Ireland as well, where they don't have skills. They just kind of, you know, as soon as you can work, you go out and you work. I think people like that are finding it harder now because they don't have that to fall back on, and they don't have the education in.
The house that we live in is fine, and that it was affordable at the time. But now it's not. His mortgage is huge, and saying all the bills are, there's nothing but by any savings we had, it's all gone now. We're trying to pay bills. Some weeks you have the money for bills, other weeks you don't.
It's hard. Like my daughter there, she made her communion this year, which was a lot of expense as well, and that, and we were, you were trying to do your best for her and not have her miss out on her day and let her have everything, but just, then you still have the worry of her.
Yeah, it's just everything is a financial burden on you. Yeah. Like everyday life, it's just turned so hard now for the two of us. you know, and then there's back to school allowance, which is only €200. The uniform costs that alone, and she'll go through two, maybe three sets of uniform a year, and then there's the books and everything else.
That report was by Jennifer Duggan in Ireland, and it was the first of our commissioned pieces from our guest editor, Geir Harder, the former Icelandic Prime Minister, who's in the studio with me now. Geir, I don't want to sound like a sort of medieval vicar, but is there something in here, a sort of lesson to be drawn, particularly for small countries such as Ireland, such as Iceland, where for a long time it just felt as if, you know, the times were so good they couldn't possibly stop, and then they did?
Well, I certainly think there is a lesson for the smaller countries and for the bigger countries as well, although I'm focusing on the smaller ones here today. After a long period of growth, one has to expect something else. And this something else, of course, was much more dramatic than people had expected. The recession and the crisis is much deeper.
But people also felt that nothing was being put aside for those bad times. You know, you're an economist. As you say, cycles happen.
Cycles happen, and, you know, go back to the economics of the Old Testament. You know, you have seven good years, and then you have seven bad years, and you have to prepare for those. And we did a lot of preparations back home in Iceland with respect, for instance, in the public finances. We paid back all our government debt almost. And the government is well positioned to deal with the situation now. But I think the stories that we were hearing from Ireland are very sad, and it's difficult to listen to people who are in this situation. But I'm afraid this is so in many countries. There are pockets like this all over Europe and situations that are much worse, in fact, than the one that we are experiencing in Iceland. Although, happily, there are also pockets of prosperity.
Geir Harder, for the time being, thanks very much, and we'll be looking forward to coming back to you later in the programme. Well, could it be that in Iceland, the home country of our guest editor, Geir Harder, that people there have turned not to growing vegetables so much as growing babies? Data shows that there were 3.5% more children born in the first half of this year than last year, and many people are speculating about a link with the economic downturn, as is our business reporter Duncan Bartlett.
Well, it is rather counterintuitive to think that recession would cause more babies. That hasn't been the case normally in history, but perhaps in times of economic trouble, people do turn to love and sex for comfort. And it's certainly true that there's something like 75 more babies born in Iceland in the first half of this year than in the first half of 2008. Here's the view of the internet blogger Alda Sigmundsdottir.
I first became aware of it just about a week or two ago when I ran into a friend on the street who just happens to be pregnant. She said it seemed to her that every other woman was pregnant. And I just realized, you know, looking around, that yes, every other woman practically is pregnant. And then I just sort of started reflecting on it. And it seemed that when I calculated back, it's now coming up 10 months since the first bank collapsed here and we were sort of thrown into the fray of the crisis or the crepa. I started sort of just philosophizing whether there might be a connection between the two.
What do you think the connection could be then?
It seems to me that there was a lot of madness here during the boom years in Iceland. You know, there was a lot of craziness and pressure to measure up and people sort of chasing impossible dreams and goals and so on. And when the crisis hit, I think a lot of people just got a wake-up call and realized that what really is important in life is not chasing money or whatever, but the family and the sort of sense of community and the people that are closest to you. And at the end of the day, that's what matters. And those are the people that will stand by you and support you and love you.
That was the blogger Alda Sigmundsdottir talking to our business reporter Duncan Bartlett, and our guest editor Geir Harder is in the studio with me now. Geir Harder, I know that you have two grandchildren on the way, I'm sure long planned before this recession hit, but do you think there's something in that people have decided to have different priorities as a result of the easy money no longer being there?
Well, I think this is very good news, and it is a reflection of optimism, if anything, if it has any meaning at all. But it could also be, in a small country like ours, just a statistical aberration, you know. But let's hope that it's more than that.
Allow yourself to be romantic about this.
No, but we're very happy about this, and personally, with my own family situation, of course.
Do you think, though, that I don't want to make too much of a sort of heavy moral point about it, but there could be an argument that perhaps the money blinded some people to maybe the more important things in life.
Oh, I'm sure there is a point in that. And what the lady said here had a lot of truth to it. People were chasing dreams that perhaps were unrealistic, but and are getting maybe more down to earth right now. So I think this is a hopeful and a good sign. But keep in mind that our birth rate has always been higher than in the rest of Europe. So we're a growing population and a relatively young population.
Well, given Iceland's unwanted role at the centre of the financial storm, much of what we've talked about today, Geir, has concentrated on the recession. But we wanted to allow you a little bit of lighter relief, not just talking about the baby boom, given that you don't have a leading Icelander on the programme every day. So I'm keen that you tell us a little about how you unwound when you found yourself in the middle of this disaster that was unfolding around you. What did you do to keep sane?
Well, I enjoyed a lot of the cultural availabilities that there are. We are a nation of culture. We have more books per capita put out every year. Lots of films are made, and a lot of music is produced. And we have a lot of professional singers, for example, opera singers, who are working in Europe. And you mentioned the European Song Contest earlier, and we came in number two this year with our great, lovely Johanna. So, and of course you have people like Björk, who is world famous, and Emiliana Torini is a very well-known person in Europe as a singer.
And you have a particular favourite as an opera singer.
Well, I was going to bring in a song by Garðar Thór Cortes, who was one of our younger stars. In every way, you are the light, and I believe our love is a miracle.
What's the appeal of Garðar Thór Cortes for you?
He has a wonderful tenor, a wonderful voice. His father was also an opera singer. And I think he has a lot of a promise for the future, and to follow the example of some other great singers that we've had.
And tell me about your authors that you've enjoyed reading as well. I mean, I presume you've had the need for escapism in the recent months.
Well, I can tell you there is a new industry in Icelandic literature, which is the crime industry, the crime pictures, both pictures and books. And our writers have been quite successful, have been translated into several languages, including English. I recommend them. A gentleman named Arnaldur Indriðason, for example, or Arni Þórarinsson, a lady Irsa Sigurðardóttir. These are all very good writers who have been translated and are available in other languages. And there are films coming out on the basis of those stories.
And we can't talk about Icelandic culture and not talk about Björk.
I mentioned her already. She's of course a great world-famous artist.
And tell us about the album that you've picked in particular.
Yes, Glyn Glow. It's an old one. It's an old album, very old, but you know, I'm getting old. I like that kind of music. So here it is.
Gerhard, our guest editor on Europe Today. It's been an enormous pleasure. Thank you very much indeed for coming on.
Pleasure's been mine.